Hey friends, this is Michael Bohm with Youth Apologetics Training. Today we'll continue on with this series on Hinduism, and we're going to pick up basically where we left off yesterday, except, well, I'm going to change gears and I want to talk about karma. All right, now I've talked about this before in the Buddhism series as well, but Hinduism has a little bit different version of karma. Basically, they don't believe in sin as we see it. As far as Hinduism is concerned, there is really no moral right or wrong. There's no such thing as evil. Okay? So there's just right actions and wrong actions, which produce right and wrong or good and bad karma. Now, it's an interesting concept. Okay, so you've got this karma, and it makes me think of Catholicism. If you listen to my series on Catholicism, I actually bring it up in the first series of that I talk about Catholicism, and also in my interview with Mike Gendron. Don't miss that. That's pretty good. But anyway, it reminds me of the Catholic concept of meritorious works. All right, so you've got this in Catholicism, not Hinduism, Catholicism. When you die, you end up going to this fictitious place called purgatory. And in purgatory, you burn off your sins that you accrued in this lifetime. All right, so Jesus didn't really pay for all your sins. You still have to pay for them yourself in purgatory, right? But, okay, in purgatory, you're burning off this like negative account. This is kind of like your debts, right? You're paying off your debts. Well, on the positive side, there's this concept of meritorious works, where you're working, performing various rites in Catholicism, or rather, I should say, sacraments, and just doing all the right things. Sometimes gaining meritorious works or gaining some of this heavenly merit to go to your treasury account of merits would be something as simple as joining the Pope's Twitter account. I kid you not, that was something the most recent Pope busted out, is that if you joined his Twitter account and receive his tweets, you would get an indulgence, which would, you know, count towards your meritorious works. So there's all these things that you can do to gain this merit in Catholicism. Now, when you die, you've got this treasury of merit of your own, okay? And then you've got all this sin debt that you've also accrued in your lifetime. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, how much merit do I have to pay off my bills? You know? And if you have enough and you pay off your bills, you skip purgatory. If you don't have enough, you end up in purgatory. And then, of course, your friends and family who are still alive can give money. It's always about money. Give money to the Catholic Church for indulgences that will spring you out of purgatory early to help pay your debt. All right, does that make any sense? Trying to draw a parallel. When I look at karma, I kind of get the same feeling. There is good karma, you know, doing these the right things, living the right way. And then there is bad karma, and that would be, oddly enough, if you do a Google search on what is bad karma, what produces bad karma, you see a lot of articles that, oddly enough, seem to lean strangely towards the Ten Commandments in various ways. Now, you're going to see, like, don't murder, don't lie, don't steal, respect others, be nice to other people, do unto others as you'd like them to do unto you. I mean, a lot of the things that cause bad karma seem to be things that actually the real God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, the God of the Bible, seems to hold in high regard as well. Things that, you know, if you steal, you murder, you cheat, stuff like this. When you treat others badly, it's sinful. Well, a lot of times you're going to find in Hinduism that a lot of those same things, those actions against others and against yourself too, bad actions against yourself, taking bad care of yourself, disrespecting yourself, even martyrdom is considered bad karma in Hinduism, unless you're experiencing martyrdom because you're trying to do something good for others. Then, well, things get a little gray there, and it really depends. All right, so if you die, and you've got more bad karma than you've got good, well, you're going to go to a lower place. Now, if you're going to go lower in your caste, that's one thing. If you're already kind of low on the caste ladder, you might end up as an animal. All right? And in this case, there is obviously no real free will as this during this time as an animal. All right? So it's almost like this is your lowest, this is purgatory in a sense. Right? You end up as an animal, you're not going to be able to ascend. Rather, you're just going to be working off that bad debt. You're going to be working off that bad karma. And then when you die as an animal, you get another shot at humanity. All right? Does that make any sense? But the one thing I wanted to stress is in Hinduism, really, there is no moral law. There is no true right and wrong. All right? Oh, well, I'm at it. Well, I'm talking about things that can gain you merit or good karma, I should say. In Hinduism, one of those things is pilgrimages. I want to talk about this for a second. In Hinduism, there are many different pilgrimages. And it's kind of like a sacred journey. And really, there's a lot of... Okay, it's like a pilgrimage is like combining the concept of vacation. Oh, that's a wonderful word. Vacation. And also religious observance. It's like you're taking a vacation and you're combining it with a religious experience slash observance. Okay, so you might be going to holy places, you know, different places where perhaps different parts of the stories in the Ramayana, Mahabharata, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, when you're going to these various places where these stories played out, you could be going to various holy temples. You could be visiting a site where a deity is at. There is the picture festival. That's something you see a lot of pictures online of, where you've just got bazillions of people. Like, I think this last one, well, one of them had 10 million people. I think there was a stampede where 500 people ended up dying during this thing. But can you imagine 10 million people all gathering in one place? You know, these festivals where they'll dunk themselves in the river. They have pilgrimages to tombs of saints and samadhis, okay? And so, anyway, during these pilgrimages, they have reasons for doing this. They go there to remember special people. They go there to fix the mind on God and to glorify Him for spiritual development and to gain spiritual merit. There you go. For purification and atonement of sins. You know what's weird? That word will trickle in sometimes. For meeting and taking guidance from holy people. To perform specific religious rites, for self-reflection and contemplation, and for an uplifting and memorable experience. You see during these pilgrimages this concept of, well, it's like a vacation slash holy religious observance. Interesting. What about that red dot that you see on the forehead of a lot of Hindus? Well, that's often referred to as a bindi, and I'm not even sure if I'm pronouncing that right. I kind of think I am, but I'm not sure. That red dot. Now, the red dot is placed right there where the third eye is when you're talking chakras. This third eye, you guys have heard of chakras, right? One of these days I'll do a series on the seven chakras, or as a rock band I managed at one point had an album called Seven Blossoms. Yeah, that's right. I managed a rock band. Bet you didn't know that. That was another lifetime, speaking of reincarnation. Anyway, these seven chakras, these seven different points. This is kind of getting into Kundalini a little bit, which I talked about a tiny bit during the Todd Bentley series. But the seven chakras, aligning them, and through various poses and practices and breathing techniques and, well, a lot of New Age techniques, you try to awaken this serpent spirit at the base of your spine. That's a long story, and I'll get into that, well, maybe in this series, potentially in another series. But this red dot is placed right on the forehead where this third eye chakra is supposed to be. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this right, but it's Ajna, A-J-N-A, Ajna chakra. Okay, and it's the second one from the top. There's actually one above your head called the crown, or Saharasara. Oh, boy. You know, these names, they differ depending on what New Age occult style path you're following. I remember being exposed to this stuff back long before I got saved. By the way, I wasn't saved when I was managing that rock band either. But in the New Age and witchcraft, they all have different names. They correspond with the Tree of Life in some walks. So yeah, anyway, yikes, there's a rabbit trail. So they put this red dot on the forehead. Mainly you see it on women, okay, this bindi. And it's supposed to be, well, first of all, it kind of reminds them, because there's this little cooler spot on their forehead. It reminds them that they're supposed to be looking at God. Okay, sure. Which God? Yeah, that's the question. But nowadays, it's more of a custom for single ladies. All the single ladies. Oh, sorry. They'll have it on their forehead. You'll notice that a lot of these bindis now are changing, and it's not so much, sometimes it's not round, and sometimes it's other designs, and you're seeing all these different kind of forehead jewelry things starting to happen. Okay, so that's that. I thought I'd bring that up. And, you know, if you see a woman, see, married women would have these on their forehead or have these on their forehead too. And when you see a woman who has removed that dot, you know, suddenly one day she's walking out in public and she doesn't have the dot, that is a possible indicator that maybe she just, you know, her husband just died. Okay, so, and then, boy, that, you know, and so now you see that the family is in mourning, and that's one way that they show that. And since we're down to just the last couple minutes here, I want to bring up Sati, or Sati, another practice that, guys, it has been outlawed. It, for the most part, doesn't happen anymore, although there has been some cases, even recently, where women were still doing this. But Sati is where a woman casts herself on the funeral pyre or into the burning grave of her dead husband. Okay, so she's a widow now, and according to culture, well, they see it as, well, this is a true woman. She's true to her husband, so she jumps voluntarily into the flames and burns alive on top of her husband's funeral pyre. Now, sometimes, oh boy, in some cultures, or some areas, I should say, there's stories of women actually being tied up alive and tossed in as well. Yikes. Now, the British, they did ban this practice of Sati, okay? But it still happens from time to time. I think nowadays it's few and far between, but I think one I just read about recently, it happened in 2008 where a 75-year-old woman jumped into her husband's fire. Wow. What a bizarre custom. And it seems to go against what we were just talking about earlier, this concept of good and bad karma. You're doing a great deal of harm to yourself by jumping in those flames, but whatever the case, you know, like I said, there is, in Hinduism, there's a lot of embracing of opposites, of things that clearly contradict. So anyway, I'm at 15 minutes. That worked out pretty well. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about some of the different sects of Hinduism, as well as I want to talk about some of the gods of Hinduism as well. So don't miss that. Friends, if you like these types of podcasts, I urge you to share them in whatever social media thing that you're a part of, whether you're on Facebook or Twitter or Google+ or any of that stuff, or, you know, just out in public. Let people know that this ministry exists and these types of teachings are out there. Let's get some believers equipped and, well, friends, let's try to get some people saved. And so with that, I love you guys, and I'll see you tomorrow.